The Leslie Marshall Show, the only true democracy in talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. Live nationwide and streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Call in with your thoughts at 888-6-LESLIE.
Here to set you free. How you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome to the only true democracy in talk, wherever you get this show, because it's provided so many places worldwide. We're very grateful for that and grateful for you listening. We have a live show and also a rebroadcast of the show, so you have an opportunity if the hours don't comply with your schedule. We have two great guests joining us this afternoon. Really glad to have both of them with us on the program. First up, he's been on the show before a number of times, and he and his organization helped to educate me, I know, on a lot of things going on inside the Beltway that we as taxpayers and as voters should be aware of. Morris Pearl is chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, they're a group of hundreds of high net worth Americans who are committed to making all Americans better off by building a more prosperous, stable, and inclusive nation. Their group focuses on promoting public policy solutions that encourage political equality, guarantee a sustaining wage for working Americans, and ensure that millionaires, billionaires, and corporations pay their fair share of taxes, which sounds fair to me. Previously, Mr. Pearl was a managing director at BlackRock. That's one of the largest investment firms, not just here, but worldwide. Good to have him back with us. Mr. Pearl, thank you for rejoining us and taking the time this afternoon. Good to have you with us.
Great to be on your show, Leslie.
I understand that there was a launch of a Patriotic Millionaires University 2020, and this could not come at a better time. I want to hear all about it. I mean, we have November 2020 general election just around the corner, and I'm excited to hear, as I know you guys were excited to announce at the Pat Mills, that you're having a Patriotic Millionaires University, also known as PMU. It's back in session. Why was this created originally, PMU, the Patriotic Millionaires University, Mr. Pearl?
Well, sure. When we started our process of endorsing candidates running for Congress, we wanted to provide them the materials, the information, to allow them to really articulate the points about the tax plan. We want to encourage people to use the tax policy as something to run on, running against the policies the Republicans and Trump instituted in late 2017, and running in favor of policies of having rich people pay higher tax rates than regular working Americans. So we created PMU back then. 13 of the candidates who we endorsed actually are now House freshmen in the House of Representatives. And we're expanding PMU this cycle. Later this year, we're going to expand it to include a minimum wage policy. And the beginning of next year, we're going to include a democracy reform policies also. So we'll have tax policies, minimum wage, and democracy reform.
Is it fair to say that this is kind of one-stop shopping for polling policy and communication insights on the GOP tax scam?
Yeah, definitely. This is where candidates can get the information they can use to really campaign and really talk about these tax policies and really explain what the changes that the Republicans made to really make the rich donors richer and everyone else they don't seem to really care about. And that's causing more inequality. It's causing the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer. And we're very afraid that that's really changing the kind of America we grew up on. So we're trying to put together this material to enable congressional candidates, people who are running for office, to explain that to their voters.
And, you know, also, when we look at back in 2018, this message was a winning message, right? I mean, you know, income inequality that's being felt not just by people on the left or Democrats. It was definitely a winning message in 2018, especially for Democrats in that election.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not the only message that people ran on, but it was an important part of the message for a bunch of the House freshmen who defeated Republicans. And that, we believe, it's still a winning message because it's still a clear thing. The Republicans think that rich people should pay lower taxes. Democrats feel that rich people should pay higher taxes. It's a fairly simple, clear message.
And to that point, regarding taxes, the tax section of PMU, my understanding has been improved, that there's updated polling and new social media resources. And speaking of that polling, your new polling at PMU shows that there's another return to the thoroughly debunked theory of trickle-down economics. So, I mean, the bottom line is voters know that the tax scam never helped them and was never meant to help them, correct?
I think it's pretty clear in most people's minds. If you want to help somebody, you can give them a tax break. If you want to help somebody, giving somebody else a tax break is not really the logical answer. The idea that giving rich people having rich people pay lower taxes somehow helps poor people, I mean, it's just illogical to anybody who hears it. I don't even think the Republicans who voted for it really believed it. I think they just kind of made up some story to, I don't know, ease their conscience or make their parents feel better or something.
My understanding is, with more information, obviously there's more ammunition, but the messaging remains the same, right? That in 2017, the GOP had a tax scam, and that tax scam continues to harm our economy. And in harming our economy, it holds our country back. Can you speak specifically to how it harms our economy and how that holds our nation back?
It's what it's doing. It's making inequality just worse. If we end up with a country with a small number of rich people and lots of poor people, that doesn't enable us to build businesses. That doesn't enable us to, you know, business people, investors, to open businesses where they need people to buy their stuff. We, as investors and business people, want to open businesses in places where people have money. Having the rich people get richer and richher and richer doesn't do a thing, because they don't spend more money when they get even richer. Whether somebody has $30 billion or $40 billion does not really affect their lifestyle, their spending at all. On the other hand, for the person who's making $30,000 or $50,000 or $80,000 a year, those differences make a huge difference, because they spend almost all of their money. And so that's why growing inequality is bad for American business, bad for American investment, and bad for America.
No question about it. And when you talk about that small group of rich people, I mean, you know, one of the things this tax scam has done, which sadly most Republican plans, at least in my lifetime, when it comes to taxation or any budget, quite frankly, provides massive tax cuts to millionaires, billionaires, also massive tax cuts to multinational corporations. And all of this is at the expense of the American worker, to your point. At PMU, you have made and you continue to make the case that not only, you know, what is happening to the nation, what is happening to America's workers, but you do it with a compelling format designed to keep candidate strategy a step ahead of the curve. Can you talk a little bit about that format, or no, because that'll give too much information if somebody's not enrolled in PMU?
Well, I mean, anybody who wants to can use our material. We're hoping that everyone who runs for Congress runs on these issues. So anyone is perfectly happy to look at Patriarch Millionaires University and use as much of our material as you want. We've tried to organize in a way that you can find information about different types of the tax policies. We've included talking points. We've included speaking points. We've included things that candidates can post on social media to try to explain these points with a few little pictures. I'm 59. I'm not quite used to social media yet, because I haven't grown up with it, but there's a lot going on there too. So I think we've tried to do the best we could to provide all the information and all the material that candidates who choose to run on tax policy and against the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that those candidates can use our material and effectively articulate those issues and run on those points.
I also want to talk about additional announcements. I know people should keep an eye out for those as 2020 approaches. It's around the corner, and certainly, we're seeing that the election cycle's in full swing. We're going to talk about that after we come back from this brief break. Keep listening to our guest, Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. And also, we have more to talk about, so don't go away. Check out the website during the break, patrioticmillionaires.org. Follow Mr. Pearl on Twitter, at Morris_Pearl, capital M-O-R-R-I-S, underscore capital P-E-A-R-L. And for the Pat Mills, Patriotic Millionaires, follow them at Patriotic Mills. On Instagram, follow them there as well, at Patriotic Millionaires. I'm Leslie Marshall, back with Mr. Pearl and you right after this. Don't go away. And we are back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Our guest is Mr. Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. Mr. Pearl, thank you for holding. Welcome back. We were talking before the break about things people should keep an eye out on for PMU and things that you guys are building. Other principles like a living wage and political equality. I know those components will be up and running soon. With more facts, studies, arguments to take on an economy rigged for the rich and powerful. But can you touch upon a living wage? Can you touch on political equality just a little bit before that's built out with PMU?
Well, sure. Overall, all of these parts are help for candidates to try to make the pro-business, pro-investor case for these policies. So just as we're making the business case of why it's better for business people and investors to have a more fair tax system, we're also explaining the business case of why business people and investors want to build their businesses and invest in places that have living wages. And it should be obvious. If you think about it, if you're opening some kind of business, selling stuff to people, like a bar or a hairdressing operation or anything, well, do you want to be in a high-wage area or a low-wage area? You're going to make more money building your business in a high-wage area where people have money to buy stuff. So that's what we're talking about, is why the United States should have a higher minimum wage and should ensure that all the citizens have a living wage so they can have enough money to live on. It seems pretty obvious, but we're trying to make the pro-business and pro-investor case of why it's actually in the business people and investors' own long-term enlightened self-interest to have higher wages. And the same with democracy reform. It doesn't work when people with the most political power have that power just because they're wealthier. What we need is for all people to have political power, not just the wealthy. And in the long run, that's better for the wealthy people too. People are getting fed up with thinking their votes don't count and their thoughts don't count and what they want doesn't count with their elected officials. They want to feel listened to, and we need to have the kind of democracy reforms to give regular working Americans the same kind of political ability that, unfortunately, for the most part, is reserved for the rich. So those are the things that we're trying to talk about.
Well, there's never been a more important time to be involved in the political process. I know you guys have also updated Patriotic Millionaires University for Citizens. And tell us a bit about this. This is the grassroots-focused sister site to PMU, correct?
Sure. It's the same basic points, but where PMU is sort of aimed at people running for office, how to talk about these, our Citizens version is aimed at explaining to people what they are trying to do, you know, about the substance of the policies, what we're trying to do to help people understand why they should be in favor of policies to help everybody, not just policies that help the rich. Somehow the Republicans in 2017 and other times have somehow convinced people that, oh, you have to appease the rich people or they'll take their ball or their money or whatever and run away and, you know, not be nice to you anymore. Whereas really, appeasement has never worked in the past and it doesn't work now. So we're trying to explain to everyday Americans like you and me and everyone else that we don't have to appease these few rich people, that we will be all be better off if we have policies that help all of us.
And let's talk about some of the not policies, perhaps, that have been rigged, but the knowledge of voters that the economy is rigged for the rich. Looking at polling, a whopping 75% of Americans believe that our government mostly serves special interest and lobbyists, not the people. And a poll showed last year that only 22% of Americans believe that the government serves the public interest. What I found interesting about this poll, Mr. Pearl, and perhaps you could speak to this, is that includes that 75%, 70% of Republicans, 81% of Democrats, almost the same, regardless of political ideology.
People want to have a change. And the people who voted for Donald Trump voted to have a change in government. So did people who voted for, Bernie Sanders, the people who are going to rallies for Elizabeth Warren. They're all looking for something different, not just more of the same. And, you know, political leaders have to understand that times are changing. And I believe that things are moving in our favor. So many of the Democrats running for president are all talking about a more fair tax system. And so I think clearly things are moving in our direction, that Americans are understanding us, and hopefully their political leaders will too. Because all Americans on both sides of the aisle realize that things have been getting worse over the last few years in terms of taxes, and in terms of people's participation in democracy. And so hopefully I think that they're going to vote for changing things to make the tax system more progressive and make our democracy more inclusive and make wages such that people can have living wages wherever they live in our country.
We thank you for being with us. We are out of time, but tonight's the Democratic debate, and we'll get to see those Democrats talk about that, talk about taxation, talk about fair taxation, and talk about programs that benefit Americans and the middle class and the workers and not the rich, like Mr. Pearl, who says, hey, I'm rich, but tax me and tax me more. So do the other Patriotic Millionaires. Thank you, Mr. Pearl. Mr. Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. Like I said, check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. On Twitter, follow him there, @Morris_Pearl. Patriotic Millionaires, @PatrioticMills, and on Instagram, @PatrioticMillionaires. I'm glad to have with us founder and principal of ASO Communications, Anant Shankar Arsurio. Anant examines why certain messages falter where others deliver. She's led research info onto how to persuade and mobilize on issues ranging from tackling right-wing race baiting to promoting clean energy and from honoring the rights of immigrants to reforming criminal justice. Anant has delivered her findings at venues such as the U.S. Congressional Progressive Caucus, Center for Australian Progress, Irish Migrant Center, Open Society Foundations, Ford Foundation, New Zealand Council of Trade Unions, the European Commission, and Lush International. More than a pleasure to have with us Anant Shankar Arsurio. Anant, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for being with us. First off, you have a podcast. It's called Brave New Words. It is a new podcast, and it takes listeners on a journey around the globe, and it does it with you. You unpack real-world narrative shifts that actually led to real-world victories. First of all, tell us about Brave New Words and tell us what brought you to do this podcast, why you felt it was important to do.
Yeah, well, mostly I just got tired of my own hypocrisy. And what I mean by that is I was constantly telling my clients and people in speeches that in order to actually win, what the research shows us is that we have to be for things and not against things. And here I was delivering lectures around the world, telling people, this message sucks, and this message is terrible, and this message is terrible, thereby doing the very thing I was telling people not to do, which is don't tell people what you're against, tell them what you're for. And so rather than continue in that vein, I decided to package together places where we had done deep research into perception and persuasion and then actually implemented those results in messaging across the board from digital ads, from speeches, social media, and one.
Interesting and exciting. Broadcasting, I love when people do podcasts and go into areas. I love travel. I love history. I love politics. And it sounds like Brave New Words is the type of podcast that was made for me. Talk to me about certain things that, you know, you've covered on your podcast And I haven't had the opportunity to listen to Jacinda Ardern, who's Prime Minister of New Zealand, is somebody I became a big fan of when I saw not only that she didn't have to get married to have a baby and that she had a baby leading a nation, but also the way she truly led the nation and her people after the attack on the mosque in New Zealand, you know, where Muslim parishioners of that mosque, so many lost their lives, the community was traumatized, and how she was just so humane and so kind and really got down to their level as a leader in that nation, and then truly led with further gun reform measures, gun control measures and reformation that people did not fight about, but happily complied with. Can you talk about the election of that dynamic leader, Jacinda Ardern, Prime Minister of New Zealand?
Yeah, so I had the incredible pleasure. I've been to New Zealand a few times to work with the Labour Party, which is her party. And basically, that episode is the extraordinary story of how she won a campaign in 7 weeks. The unbelievable start of that story is that 7 weeks before the election, you can imagine, right, the banners had been printed, the posters were done, the slogans were created. The leader of the Labour Party, Andrew Little, decided to step down because the polling was so abysmal and all predictions had it that Labour didn't stand a chance to get anywhere near enough seats to form a coalition government in the parliamentary system. So suddenly you have this new youngest leader ever in that nation's history to be, you know, put on the spot. And she's got 7 weeks to rewrite everything and to change out the photo. And not only did she manage to do that, and did the Labour Party manage to kind of upend all conventional wisdom by really concertedly campaigning on what they were for and not berating and, you know, belaboring how bad the ruling party, the National Party, which is Conservative Party, was. They really spoke authentically to who Jacinda was, what she stood for, and said almost nothing about what they were against. And 7 weeks, I mean, you can imagine in a U.S. context, and that, you know, think of a campaign lasting 7 weeks and that's all you got.
Also, some things that you have tackled, some things that the world watched was the repeal of the national ban on abortion in Ireland. And I know this is something you've covered on your podcast as well. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, another extraordinary story. So abortion, 1983, there was a provision passed by 66% of the Irish electorate to formally ban abortion, to write it into the Constitution as the Eighth Amendment. Interestingly, the yes vote in 2018, exactly the same proportion, 66% of people voted to repeal that amendment. And that story is really the story of how you talk to a mass population about voting for the right of women and people to be able to control their own bodies and destinies. And in that case, really, I think the core understanding, the core crux of it was a move away from sympathy, an attempt to create messaging that says, feel sorry for her, feel sorry for that woman, feel sorry for her circumstance, to actually creating a bridge to empathy. And one of the closing arguments that I think is really potent and powerful that they utilized was, a woman you love might need your yes. Basically raising up this idea that the future is uncertain. None of us can know the path a pregnancy will take. And at some point, there will be a woman in your life who is going to need an abortion. And what will she do then?
Also want to talk about, this is something I really like, the subject matters that you pick for the podcast. These are things that are like, wow, that interests me. So I think because I pick topics for my show like that, that would interest my listeners as well. So I definitely hope they check this out. Talk to us about the right wing race baiting in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah. So I would say that a through line across my work, and certainly what's profiled in the episodes, is this project that I helped co-lead over the last year and a half that we call the Race Cost Narrative. And basically, that was an exploration both nationally, and then we did a deeper dive in 4 states, including Minnesota, to understand how people make sense of and come to judgments about race. And what we found in the research and implemented in Minnesota and other spots was that far from being this choice that the Democratic establishment says that we have to make between either persuasion or mobilization, in fact, what we find is that messages that explicitly name race are both more mobilizing to a progressive base and actually more persuasive to the voters that are on the fence, who unsurprisingly are largely white. And basically, what the architecture of that race class narrative, what we implemented in Minnesota, is what I like to call narrating the dog whistle. It is making explicitly clear, my pithy version of it is point your finger at the bad guy, not the brown guy. It's making explicitly clear that the right wing uses race and place of origin and, you know, other kinds of statuses in order to intentionally divide us from each other. Because when they have us divided up, when they have us arguing about who belongs and who doesn't, and who believes in our way of life and who doesn't, and fearing each other because, say, you know, some of us are Muslim or some of us are immigrants or some of us speak with an accent or some of us have darker skin, when they divide us and distract us, that is what allows them to do their plutocratic best. Because they know that if working people across race and place stand together, then we are on to them. And the fact that, you know, our suffering and our hardship actually comes from the 0.01%. It doesn't come from Juan, right? Juan is not taking your job. Jeff Bezos is taking your job. Juan's just standing in front of the Home Depot trying to get some day labor.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about a little bit more in Minnesota, because we do have a general election coming up. We also have Democratic debate tonight. We'll talk about that as well and more with the host of this great new podcast. You can check it out, Brave New Words podcast. And we'll be back with our guest, Anna Shanker Osorio. I'm Leslie Marshall. Don't go away. We are back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Our guest is as well, Anna Shanker Osorio. She's founder and principal of ASO Communications. And we are talking about the brand new podcast, Brave New Words. Thank you for holding, Anna. And let's talk about Minnesota a little bit more. We were talking before the break. Because in Minnesota, is it fair to say that the GOP operatives read, when they look at the 2016 election, the slim victory that Hillary Clinton had, as an opportunity to rally people who are like-minded with many of that Trump base, using racially coded anti-immigrant Islamophobic appeals. In 2018, progressives in the state seemed to, do pretty well. I mean, they won across races. They defined what it means to be a true Minnesotan. They used it with a very popular multiracial populism narrative. But does the GOP, in a sense, have a bit of an upper hand? And is that why they're targeting that state? They target that state for a couple of reasons. One, the slim victory of Hillary Clinton, and second, the demonization of Omar Ilhan.
Yeah. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. What we were seeing in Minnesota, sort of, definitely the GOP was, you know, trying to read the tea leaves and trying to turn Minnesota into Wisconsin, into Ohio, into North Dakota, into all of the neighboring states who had, of course, succumbed to right-wing governance a while back. You know, when you look at it demographically, it was only the strength and the unity of the progressive movement at the state level in Minnesota that kept it from being a Wisconsin, because demographically there kind of was no reason, right? It's not a California. It's not that the demographics were just instantly in their favor. And the GOP was really hoping that they would be able to flip the state. And they're hoping, once again, you know, it's not for nothing that Trump showed his face in Minneapolis. He generally doesn't go to spots where he didn't win. And they're salivating over this idea that because you have a state that has historically been pretty white and has what feels to them to be a pretty new immigrant population, that's not just any immigrant population, it is Somali refugee families who are largely Muslim, largely Black. So you kind of have the trifecta in immigrant, Muslim, and Black of, race baiting, right? You have race baiting, xenophobia, and Islamophobia all wrapped up in one package. And what organizers in the state, progressive organizers, were seeing in 2016 was that when they would go to the doors in a place like St. Cloud or in a place even like Rochester outside of the major cities, when they would try to just do an economic populist argument, right, contain college costs, lower healthcare costs, better wages and working conditions, kind of a standard democratic colorblind populism, what they would get back at the door was, you know, that all sounds great. That sounds good. Yes, I'd like college to be cheaper. Yes, I'd like to be able to pay for my health care, obviously. But if my Somali neighbor is going to get that, then I don't want it. Or they would say, well, the reason this is so expensive or the reason that child care is like this is because those people are committing fraud. And so what the organizers saw in the state is that it wasn't going to be possible to have a democratic message that was colorblind, because politics isn't solitaire. If your message doesn't just compel people and entice them, but also act as a rejoinder to what the other side is saying, it's not going to penetrate, because the other side is race baiting and dog whistling constantly. So we don't have a choice to not talk about race. We don't have a choice. If our side, if the left is silent about race, then the only messages the other side hears about race are horrible, untrue, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, anti-Black, you name it, invective. That kind of discourse continues. And so the organizers in the state, both within labor unions and in grassroots groups, faith-based, came together and said, you know what? We need a coherent narrative to counter this. And that's why we did the race class narrative research that we were discussing before the break. And armed with that empirical evidence that, hey, look, a message that explicitly named race outperforms a colorblind message across demographics, not just with our base, but with persuadables, we created a campaign that we called Greater Than Fear, and that we implemented through digital video, through creative social media. We had clapbacks like dogs against dog whistling, or you could send us a picture of your dog and we would turn it into a superhero. And when somebody said something untoward in social media, you could clap back. And we really saturated the state with this idea defining what Minnesotan is as multiracial, as multi-ethnic, as multilingual, and we really presented an affirmative vision of what the state could be and named what the other side was doing as deliberate division in service of their corporate agenda.
I also wanted to, you know, ask you, when there have been attacks, especially on Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, the people have rallied around her. It's almost like the more the president and the GOP and the right wing attack her, the more others come to her defense. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah. I mean, I think that part of that phenomenon, besides, you know, who she is and what she represents, being that trifecta of things that we have been taught to fear and to dislike and to distrust because she is born abroad, because she is Muslim, and because she is Black, it's also just a larger truism that if you want to touch a nerve, you got to touch a nerve. And when you have a message that engages your base to repetition, that is the way that you persuade the middle. Because if your words don't spread, by definition, they don't work. And so what Ilhan Omar, what other members of the quote-unquote squad have really understood about messaging is that you need your base to carry a message in order for the middle to hear it. And so if what you're testing for and what you're trying to figure out to say is just where are people already and what can we say that's not going to upset anybody, by definition, the base isn't going to be enamored of that idea and they're not going to repeat it. It's not going to turn into a drumbeat. And so when these kind of polarizing moments happen, they are moments at which we can actually reframe the debate by speaking in our own terms as opposed to always responding to theirs.
I wanted you to, we have so many things to cover and not enough time. Let's touch upon Australia and specifically people seeking asylum in Australia. The government there crafted and carried out an immigration policy so abusive that Trump liked it. But over the past few years, there is a conservative and openly xenophobic administration. There are more people out there that are human rights advocates that are mounting a defense against this. They've won four campaigns challenging offshore detention of people seeking asylum. Speak to that briefly.
Yeah. So when I got to Australia in 2015, horrible situation, horrible policies, horrible public opinion, sort of everything you could possibly imagine against people seeking asylum, which is a term I use deliberately. It tests much, much better than asylum seekers for reasons that are probably obvious. And what we really did after doing deep research, which is publicly available, it's on the website for the podcast, you can see the message testing that we did, we flipped the frame away from human rights law and really sort of belaboring the abuses, which were legion, toward creating a full three-dimensional picture of these people who were being detained offshore in horrible conditions. And so we did things like take out articles, put out articles in Women's Wear Daily, which is a sort of lifestyle magazine, about cooking, about favorite music, about parenting. And we just presented the people in these detention centers in their full three-dimensional humanity, as opposed to focusing in on deprivations and harms. What the research tells us, and I say this very deliberately to a U.S. audience, every time we show an image of a person behind bars, whether that person be a child, whether that person be a sort of adult male, when we show these images of immigrants in detention, we actually reinforce the opposition's narrative that immigrants are animals. And so in our well-meaning desire to depict deprivations and harms, we are actually acting against our own narrative by presenting the idea of immigrants as victims, when in fact what they are is fully courageous, agentive, tenacious people who have made a way out of no way at all.
Really appreciate you being with us today. We'll have you on again. Definitely a pleasure talking with you. Thank you. Anat Shankar Arsurio. We are wanting you to check out her website. The website's where you can find the podcast, bravenewwordspod.com. Check out the Brave New Words podcast. Sounds like very interesting to me. I know it's something you will like. BraveNewWordsPod.com. On Twitter, follow her follow Brave New Words at _ Brave New Words, and follow her at Anatosaurus, Anatosaurus. I'm Leslie Marshall. Have a great day. Marky Mark Romaldi is my executive producer. We'll be back with you soon.